Welcome to Life on the Illinois Prairie. Your host is Wendy Fleming Dexter, and after 30 years living in small town Illinois, she has stories to tell. Past cornfields and factories, into the heart of Amish country. There's more here than what meets the eye, far beyond what you think you know. So buckle up and stay tuned. This is Life on the Illinois Prairie.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Life on the Illinois Prairie. I'm your host, Wendy Fleming Dexter. Joining me today is a woman I've tried to get on this podcast for 2 years. She may not know that, but I sent her an email a couple of years ago. And as a very, very busy professional woman and wife and mother, she is here today. I would like to welcome Maggie Grindstaff, News Director of Channel 3 WCIA, to the podcast. Welcome, Maggie.
Hi, Wendy. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. I know we just talked about you attending a wedding last night in St. Louis and then coming back and coming in this morning. I mean, we'll get into just how intense a job like yours is. But first, if you would mind giving a little background information on where you grew up and what really sparked your interest in journalism.
Yeah, I grew up in Piatone, Illinois. So we always say, you know, the southern suburbs of Chicago, very much right on the line of the downstate part of Illinois. But little farm town, and that's where I grew up with my mom and dad and my brother, Jack. And then I went down to Eastern because I had always had this dream of becoming a news reporter. I would watch the anchors and reporters on the Chicago stations, and I was just enamored with their ability to be able to be boots on the ground, reporters and anchors in the city of Chicago. And so I think that really opened up my eyes to what it was that I thought I wanted to do. And, you know, as I was applying for schools, I was looking for somewhere that could support that dream of being a news reporter, a news anchor someday. And I remember walking into the TV studio at WEIU at Eastern Illinois University and just was struck by it was exactly what I was looking for. I was looking for a program that was going to allow me to be, you know, learning everything I needed to learn about TV, but really just making everything a reality that I had always dreamed about. I had journalism classes in high school. I spent time on the yearbook and the newspaper. Pretty much every journalist's, you know, first steps into the world of journalism. And when I walked into WEIU and the lights were on and the anchor desk was there, and I met Kelly Goodwin, the news director down there, I just knew that I was home. So I spent the next 4 years down at Eastern in Buzzard Hall, a lot of time in Buzzard Hall in the WEIU studio. And I was getting the experience that I was going to be able to take for the rest of my professional career. And I think that's what makes that program so special is not only the people that run it, but also, I mean, it's a full-on TV studio, a PBS affiliated when I was there, not at this time anymore. But, you know, every day being able to do a newscast that TV stations all over the country do every single day. And just the opportunity, it was very simple for me to make that decision to go to Eastern. My mom, my aunt, and my uncle all went to Eastern as well. Oh, really? So I had visited as a kid, and you know, it's corny to say, but you see the castle of Old Main, and there's something special about Eastern and Charleston, and I'm so glad that it was such a significant part of, you know, coming into adulthood, but also giving me all the resources I needed for my professional career as well.
Ah, my husband worked at Eastern for 35 years in IT, so he's very familiar with the Eastern campus. And of course, I grew up in Mattoon, so you know that was just a hop, skip, and a jump across the Route 16 to get there. And a lot of times when people, I know that like Amanda Brenham, which I believe she grew up in, I want to say Naperville, that a lot of times when people come down here and go to school, not she, I know she went to school at U of I, but that it's more of a culture shock when they come out of a more of a city environment. But Piatone being kind of, as you say, on the outskirts, it may have not been quite a culture shock for you as it would have been for some.
Nope, it was, I was used to cornfields and small town living. And that was the cool thing when I, you know, started my reporting career, both down at WEIU, but here at WCIA as well, was I was going to small towns that were very similar to my hometown that I grew up in. So I think there were a lot of similarities. And I kind of always envisioned myself as a big city girl. I thought that was part of the plan at some point, you know, have that one bedroom apartment and walk to work and the hustle and bustle of the city. But life always has different plans. And I've called Central Illinois my home ever since, you know, that first semester down at Eastern. And it's definitely home. It's exactly where I'm supposed to be. And I'm really happy to see what has happened during that time.
Well, I think it's been a great training ground, not just for you, but people like Larry Smith, who went on to work at CNN, who is also a guest on this podcast because he grew up in Mattoon. And I think it's got to have proven itself to have several people who have gone on to, you know, to become, to live out their dreams and not just have a career, but a career that they love and enjoy. So did you start out at WCIA as an intern?
No, I did not. I was actually at WAND as an intern, my first internship in Decatur. So I spent a summer there, and then I finished my final year of schooling at Eastern and started applying for jobs, you know, early spring, just hoping to find somewhere. And it's so funny when the applying for TV jobs is so different now. Now, you know, you've got a reel on YouTube where news directors can take a look at the stories that you've done. And you can use social media to promote yourself and seek those opportunities on LinkedIn and things like that. But when I was applying, I just got a big stack of manila envelopes and I started putting my reel on a CD and sending it all over the country. And now knowing what I know about the industry, probably some wasted postage was included in that first batch of resumes because I was shooting for the stars. It was Nashville. It was the Indianapolises of the world. But actually, I had met a WCI anchor down at a job fair that Eastern was having. Probably it was February or March of, you know, my graduation year. And he and I had a great conversation and he just said, "I'm really sorry. We don't have any openings right now. I can take your resume. And, you know, maybe something will come up at some point." And so I think this industry is all about that, making those connections, finding your way in, and that's absolutely what happened in that situation. So met him, you know, early in the year of graduation, and then started applying and saw that WCIA had a reporter opening and just decided, okay, the Nashvilles, the Indianapolises, probably not ready for those, but Champaign could be, you know, a great way to get started in the news world. So came for an interview and, you know, it was so eye-opening. And really, at the time, WCIA wasn't known for hiring college graduates. So I had just walked across the stage and, you know, I kind of knew it was unlikely that I was going to get a call, that I was who they had selected. But to my surprise, they called and wanted to offer me a position. And that's always going to be a proud moment in my career because my mom and dad didn't help me get that job, or it wasn't because of just knowing the anchor that I had encountered. It was because of all the hard work I had put in at school. And I really wanted to know that I was going to start working that summer. A lot of college grads spend a couple months, you know, figuring out life, and they want a vacation because they've been going to school for 4 years and all these different things. And I just wanted to hit the ground running. And that's always been my mindset. I have a strong work ethic. I had a lot of really, really strong mentors growing up that helped develop that. But working to me is important because, you know, it gives you purpose. It gives you fulfillment. But I want to do a good job. I want to be recognized for the work that I do. And so, you know, coming to WCIA as a, we don't typically hire college graduates, was a little daunting. And I knew walking in, I was, hadn't even turned 21 yet, or was about to turn 21 now. So somewhere around there. And I didn't want to be known as the young one in the building. So I went for my best option in the newsroom to be able to say, how do I not appear as the young one, both appearance-wise, delivery in my stories, things like that. And Jennifer Roscoe took me under her wing and really showed me the ropes and told me what I could wear on TV and what I couldn't wear, and helped me learn how to do my makeup and things like that. And so I think because WCIA is known for that program of bringing in the younger journalists and then giving, I always say when I'm hiring, I can give you all the resources and tools you need to be successful. It's all about what you do with them, and that will determine your destiny. And I think because when I came in, I was willing to learn. I was super excited to be here. And it was the coolest thing ever to get to say, I got a job as a news reporter, because I had had a lot of naysayers, you know, in my my college years of, oh, you say you're going to be on TV, but nobody actually, you know, you have to know someone, or you have to live in a big city for that to happen. But WCI really opened the doors just as much as WEIU did to the idea that I'm going to get to be a TV news reporter if I put in the work and effort. And, I was able to do that. And so signed that first 3-year contract and got to work and have been here ever since.
Oh, well, you know, I think that getting to, we talked about you, the people, the reporter that you talked to when you were trying to went at that job fair. I mean, we use the word networking now quite often, but really, I think that's where it originally came from, was the, you know, people networking in the environment that you find yourself in. And so did you dream when you took this job as a reporter that you would end up as the first female news director in the history of Channel 3, WCIA? Did you ever? You said you have that work ethic.
Yeah, news director was never part of the plan. I was just here to be a solid news reporter, spend some time at the anchor desk, and continue to storytell and live in the community that I was thriving in. And then, you know, life changes, and I got married, and started to think about what the future looked like, and maybe going out to a field fire for 6 hours every day to cover the latest breaking news wasn't still the ideal plan. You know, life was changing. I had different commitments outside of work. And so I started to think about what other roles in news could you know, I possibly try or be interested in. And so the news director at the time, he said, you know, I think you really like content. Content is something that's really important to you. And so he said, what about having control of the content that we do as a station? So I became the assignment editor. I was probably 6 to 7 years into my time at WCIA. So I signed as a reporter for 2 contracts. So it had to have been around 6 years. And then got the opportunity to anchor in my 2nd contract. I was the noon anchor for quite some time. So, you know, year 6 comes around. It's, are you going to be a reporter? What are you going to do? And I had spent some time being the assignment editor just as a fill-in basis. And I really liked all the moving parts of getting to work with the reporters and the logistics of the day and knowing. I've always been nosy since I was, you know, 2 years old. And actually before then, my mom says I poked my head out of the bassinet all the time because I could hear my mom and dad talking or there was something that I was curious about. So I think because that was a natural instinct of mine. So I just started to learn the new position. I was still the noon anchor at the time because my thing at the time was I'm not ready to call it quits on TV, but can I, you know, can I juggle both sides of it? And the news director said, you know, if you're interested in doing it, that would be great. So I was the assignment editor for a couple years and then I was promoted to assistant news director. And then I was doing well. You know, I knew the job. I knew the expectation. But I don't like to do the same thing for too long. That might be a good quality or a bad quality, but I view it as just plateauing in your career or your personal life. And so I was looking for my next challenge. I will admit that to you. COVID really changed my outlook of my position because I was running and I had my son in November of 2019 and I went back to work 1 week after my maternity leave was up. And the week after I had come back in March of 2020 is when I was sent home because I had a newborn and my health and safety was important to the station. And so they said, can you learn to work from home? And I said, well, I can learn anything, but it's going to look a little different. So my son Gibson, who is now going to be 6 years old, was in a bouncer seat on one side of the living room. And I ran the newsroom virtually from my living room. So we would make a new hire. And if it was safe, I would bring the new hire to my home to train them because I wanted them to be able to still get, you know, we still had to have news reporters. We still had to have news anchors. So quite a few of them actually were trained in my family room. But there were some hectic behind the scenes of, you know, baby's crying and I'm trying to plan the day and come up with the content plan. But my team was really good to me in those moments. So actually, I always say I had the best of both worlds with my maternity leave because it was a lot longer than I expected it to be. And I really got to be there for almost the entire first year of Gibson's life. And that's something a lot of moms can't say they got the opportunity to do because maternity leave runs out and life goes back to working mom life. And so I didn't go back to work probably until November or December of the following year. And just talk about a completely different way of learning how to do things. But I think it was that moment that I knew life can be hectic, life can be unpredictable, but always, you know, always be willing to take that next opportunity. So I think because I was given that extra time to be at home with my son, when the news director position was open here, as daunting and scary as it seemed in the moment, because I was a working mom and, you know, I didn't know I didn't know how different news director would be from what I was currently doing, but I decided to throw my name in the hat. And the general manager at the time made it very clear that he was recruiting news director candidates from all over the country. And I may just not be what they were looking for because I was young and, you know, I was homegrown. I don't have a lot of out-of-station experience. Obviously, I've only been here at WCIA, but I use that all as an advantage, Wendy, because I said, those are all the reasons you should pick me. These are my people. I know what our viewers want. And WCIA has a soft spot in my heart, and I'm going to make it the very best that I can make it because I do care so deeply about this place. And, you know, when you make a new hire, it takes them about 6 months to get used to the area and find the grocery store and learn the town names and things like that. And I had all of those advantages already because I had been living here. So, did the interview, felt very confident, but, you know, being told that you're being considered with several other news director candidates across the country, you're not exactly sure. And that's always been a funny piece of the puzzle for me here at WCIA. As confident as I might have seemed in the interview process or the application process, I was kind of always met with, but don't expect that this is going to happen, or don't read into this like you're a shoo-in for the position. But I think that goes back to my work ethic. Is it's my job to show them why they need me in that role. And so when I was offered the news director position, you know, I even at some point in my career had someone in management that said, I just don't know if TV's for you. You know, I think you're, you know, awkward on TV, or you're struggling with some of the elements of being able to deliver a news report. And here I'm thinking, this is what I got a degree in. This was my dream. Mm-hmm. And someone's telling me maybe I don't fit the mold for what they're looking for. So I use all of that, though, to just continue to persevere. And the day I found out that I was offered the news director job, it finally felt like, you know, the ball's in my court. I get to call the shots. And I just remember telling, you know, my team members that I'm closest with, and they were just so excited, and they wanted it to be someone that they knew and somebody that knew the WCIA brand and knew the mission of what we do in Central Illinois. And I'm just really happy that they did select me back then. I really had no idea what I was getting myself into, as as per most things that I sign up for, but it's been very good to me. Working mom life as a news director is hectic. You definitely have to find your priorities and just try to shut work off when you're at home, which I'm not wonderful at. I'm still working on, but I think because this place was already very established, very much in working order, I love now that I get to lead the team. But I think even in my 2 years in the role, I've made some amazing hires. I've come up with, you know, internal promotions for people that deserved promotions, and now they get the opportunity to do new things, and just overall learning how to run a news station has been really exciting. I learned how to budget. Budgeting was never part of the plan. I'm a journalism major, so math is not my strong suit. But, you know, I think everything I've been able to learn really, really has gotten me to where I'm at. But it's also been great to learn all these new things that I never expected to do in my career.
Well, I think one of the key elements of being successful in your job is surrounding yourself with good people that you can trust. When you do have those times when you do go home and try to shut things off and try to be into mom and wife mode, that you know that you have confidence in the people that you have working with you. So what exactly does the news director job entail? You're talking about assignment editor, which sounds to me, you know, like you would expect when people, there are jobs that things that come in that need to be covered. But I mean, news must funnel in many different ways. You know, it must funnel in from national news and tips and different things from people that, or ongoing stories. How exactly does it work? Because you must be, you talk about pivoting. I would think you'd be constantly, I mean, I know it's constantly in a state of flux what you do. So would you give some more insight into that?
Yeah, I would say it's just, you know, managing my team. I manage the news team, the weather team, and the sports team. So that's pretty significant of a lift to juggle almost 40 people. So it's everything from, you know, helping with scheduling, helping with, you know, disciplinary things, but then also just overall team initiatives. So, you know, WCI is owned by Nexstar, and Nexstar does a lot of specific initiatives every year. All Nexstar stations do, but, you know, you'll see a focus of content centered around Black History Month. You'll see Hispanic Heritage. You'll see Remarkable Women. So there's all these separate corporate, you know, demands and initiatives that you're looking for content for. So I think I'm still really a big part of content. Even though I have an assignment editor, I'm able to still be in most all of the editorial meetings every day where we pitch our stories and we come up with what the reporters are going to be working on and what our newscasts are going to look like. And then, you know, like I said, the budget, that's a new thing that I'm handling, the news budget. And then I think, you know, just looking for ways to get my team out in the community. Hiring is a huge role that I have. I'm constantly recruiting, constantly interviewing, constantly looking for good people. But that's just the industry. I think some people think, oh, that's the smaller markets. No, TV stations all over the country are always looking for people because, you know, people are hired in and they're on contract. So that's tied to how many years they'll spend in that community. You know, you might hire a reporter that then becomes an anchor, or you might hire a reporter that spends 3 years here and then moves on to a bigger city, a bigger market, mm-hmm. a bigger opportunity. So I think navigating all of that and then just overall, just being support for my team, you know, if it's logistic problem solving, if it's we're having an issue with a story that we're working on, you know, how can I assist the team with that? And then it's working with all of the departments within the station. I think that's probably one of my biggest responsibilities is we have a creative services department. So they're doing the promotions and the commercial side of things. And then I've got a sales department and they're going out and selling, you know, advertisements connected to WCIA and why clients should want to have their commercial airing on WCIA. I've got an engineering department. Something is broken. I have to work with this person to be able to problem solve and figure out new equipment that we might need to purchase. And then a one-on-one, you know, all the time with our general manager, Angie Salas, who is, she's of course running the entire station, but, you know, making sure if I have an idea, I'm running it by her. We're working through what that might look like for the overall team because we do a lot more than just our newscasts every day. And my goal is WCIA is everywhere. And I, of mm-hmm. course, want WCIA to be presented in the very best light that it possibly can be.
Well, I can't help but agree with you on that, especially when you said earlier about having a soft spot for WCIA. I grew up with WCIA. We only had eventually three stations when I was a kid growing up west of Mattoon. And I've always had a soft spot for that station and great admiration. And it's so many people, haven't talked. Thank you for telling everything that goes into your job, because I know that a lot of us didn't really understand what all that it entails. But people on social media will say when somebody's, some employee has come and worked their time and they're moving on to another station, I always wish them well. I mean, it's a move in their career for, you know, if they do still aspire to go to the Nashvilles and to the larger stations and move on, different people, Anthony Antoine, all these people that move on, that's wonderful for them. I mean, I'm happy for them. But people always, so many people will say, why do the good ones always go? And I think, oh my gosh, what about Jennifer Roscoe, who's been for 30 years? She is one of the good ones. And what about, you know, Judy Fraser, these people who stayed until their, you know, stay till their careers are finished. There's so many people that, and I realize it's a changing world. People do, many times do not spend their entire career in one station because for a multitude of reasons. But I just find that so sad when people say that in social media, because to me, they may think they're complimenting the person who's leaving, but it's kind of a slap in the face to some others who are still there, don't you think?
Yeah, for the most part, you know, that's the first conversation you have with someone that's coming up on contract. Are you wanting to stay here or are you looking for something outside of what, you know, Champaign offers? And it's all about their success too, because especially if they stay within the Nexstar company, I can say I made that hire. They started in Champaign. They spent 3 years learning the ropes and getting comfortable with whatever their role is. And now they're in, you know, Washington, D.C., or they're reporting in New York City or something like that. And so I think we forget it's also a huge compliment to what we do in Central Illinois that then a news director of a very highly, you know, operated news station is saying this person is ready for this next challenge. You know, Gabby Miranda just moved on to Indianapolis. And as sad as I was to see her go, what an achievement. In less than a year of spending time in Champaign, she was being called to what I would say is the big leagues of, you know, Indianapolis, and making that transfer. So, you know, she was on national news last week. She posted on social media. So I think celebrating those successes along the way. The only time I feel like I get sad in the industry is when people just say, this wasn't for me. It's not the career I was pursuing. Mm. Because we've seen a lot of good people just get out of TV altogether. There's a lot of reasons behind why they were pursuing something else, but it's not for everybody. But I feel like circling all the way back to WEIU, I knew what to expect with WCIA. And I know I haven't tried out the Dallas markets of the world and things like that, but I knew exactly what, you know, I was going to get, hopefully, by walking into the WCIA newsroom, because WEIU is ran as a real TV station. And now making hires of someone who says, you know, oh, I work on 2 news stories a month in my broadcasting news class at another university somewhere in the country. I just want to say it's not going to be enough, because you have to have that mindset that this is what you're going to do every day. So I think when I'm hiring specifically, I'm looking for those people that have a little bit of the upper edge of they know what they're getting themselves into. And then when you can see someone like a Gabby make a move that quickly, you're like, wow, you know, not only did she have the good, you know, the right tools when she was getting her degree, she also, her time in Champaign was effective. And now, you know, we're able to celebrate her success in her future growth too.
Well, I think it's so important to give those people encouragement and send them on their way. I mean, I think that it's just an unfortunate part of social media that you can't get away from. And while we're in that neck of the woods, we might as well just discuss a little bit about social media, if you don't mind, because we were, before we came, started recording, we were talking about, this is being recorded on the 6th of October, and we're talking about the field fires that are currently going on in central Illinois, and I had one just a mile down the road from me, and we drove down to it, but we turned around when we got down to the road where the firefighters were, because I wasn't going to clog up the road and cause any more issues than they already had. So could you please address that, and what is, hopefully by the time this is published, that we will have had some rain and we won't have this ongoing issue, but would you please address that?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, our news tips come from something as simple as a Facebook post or a video that's sent into our newsroom. And so my meteorologist, Jacob Dickey, one of my meteorologists, he is very connected on social media. And so a lot of times viewers will send him things directly. And so we have a role of informing the community. That's bottom line, what journalists at a TV station are meant to do. And so, you know, we might put that on social media, but then sometimes what happens is you have people who want to be their own reporters, and they're going out to these scenes and trying to get their own pictures or own videos and things like that. And so we have to have a happy balance of informing the public, but not disrupting what is actively happening in that community, because first responders have to be able to get to the scene. They have to be able to do their job. And we, number one, as WCIA reporters, do not want to be in the way of what they're trying to do. But we have to be careful with social media, because we can encourage people, in a sense, with those images and videos, that they want to see it for themselves as well. But it might be, you know, an unsafe situation for the average person to go and drive by the scene or something to that effect. But, you know, we put those posts out, and there was a field fire. Oh, it's been in the last couple of weeks, and it was up near Foosland, and we got 2.4 million views on the video that we were showing, because a field fire is relevant to people here in Illinois. But then if you live in Indiana and you happen to see that, you probably want to see what's going on. And, you know, it's the Midwest. So we could cover four states of viewers in a matter of 15 minutes, depending on where that post is, because it's, of course, another way for us to inform people. And we end up getting a lot of eyeballs, you know, on our content, which kind of segues into, we have a new a TV app, WCIA 3 Plus. That's actually the studio I'm in today is it's called an OBS recording studio, and we are coming up with original programming for our app. So you can download it on Roku, Apple TV, and a Fire Stick, and it's specific to streamed newscasts, so you can watch newscasts in real time, but then also it's got original content. So Jennifer Roscoe has Let's Dish, and it's a cooking show, and she's in jeans, and she's able to be more herself and talk with these chefs that she has on. And Kevin Lighty has Behind the Forecast. And so it's what actually makes up the forecast. Obviously, there's a lot of science behind what he does to be able to get our forecast as the chief meteorologist, but also, you know, who's impacted by the forecast other than just the TV station? Well, the Illinois baseball coach needs to know what's happening with the weather that day. And he listens to our reports to be able to plan accordingly for games and practices and things like that. And so, you know, I think when I go back to the topic of WCIA being everywhere, this is another example of that. We want to be everywhere on social media. We've started a TikTok page, Instagram, and I'm a little old school with some of the social media things. If you look for me on social media, I'm very private, and you know, I share a family photo every so often, but it's just not, it's not something that I put out to the world. But I have a lot of people on my team that, you know, they're very effective in their their social media posts and their social media engagement as a whole. And I think that's what we have, viewers all over the country who know what WCIA is and what WCIA does because of social media and being able to be everywhere. And the best thing about social media and, you know, the new app that we have is we don't have to wait for a newscast to start to be able to put that information out there. Most of the time, TV stations are ran based on a programming schedule. So you have a morning show that starts at 5 a.m. and then you have a noon show that you can watch. And then you're waiting for the 5 o'clock news to start or whatever, you know, that programming looks like. But you're waiting for that slot in the day to be able to put that information out there to inform the viewers. And all of these new innovative ways to be everywhere, you can be, you can connect with your viewers at the touch of a button any time of day, anywhere. And it's a crazy concept to think that news is 24/7. News is everywhere. It's on your phone. It's on your TV app. It's on social media. But that's the idea, is we want to inform our viewers as quickly as we can, especially about things that impact their safety or their livelihood. And we like to share, you know, the positive things, too. If it's not really a news story that you would see typically in the 5 or 6 p.m. newscast, maybe it's just a picture of a little kid eating a popsicle on a hot summer day.
Yeah.
And it's going to make you feel good about life. And you're able to see this little kid enjoying the simple things in life and something like enjoying a popsicle. So I think social media can both hurt and help you in our industry. But I know that social media gets the word out very quickly. And we want to be mindful on what content we're putting out there as well.
I know from my experience that I'm living, growing up in Mattoon, that many of my friends heard, the first thing they heard about the do not drink order when the water was affected probably 2 months ago by now was through Jacob Dickey. And, of course, Kevin Leidy, too. They both have a large group of followers, and they can, that immediate response that they can put out there and get from people that, you know, not having to wait for a certain newscast is mind-blowing to me, that they can reach so many people and get the word out. On the other side of that come the naysayers and the negativity that comes with that. But I will say both of them are definitely not shy in telling people. You know, Jacob said, I block first, ask questions later. And, you know, kudos to him for not putting up with any nonsense. They, neither one of them should have to. But as I said it, people on the internet who know nothing about anything become experts on everything. And I just, it's very annoying. So we're talking about these field fires. I've seen people commenting saying, you know, talking about farmers intentionally setting fires to get insurance. And it's like, you know, my dad had crop insurance, but it wasn't for that kind of thing. I have no idea what it's like now, but people just throw all this things out there that are totally irrelevant to the facts. And that's got to be frustrating from a news, you know, on your end, because you guys are trying to do the best to inform the public. But I mean, it's not just what comes on WCIA threads or posts that those comments are made.
Yeah, I like my team to be buttoned up in what it is they're putting out there. So I always say, if you have a picture that you can verify as proof that a building's on fire, we can put it out there in basic information. But the station is huge on, we don't speculate. We don't use anonymous sources. We don't put information out there without it being confirmed. We wait for officials to provide this information because, like I said, back to the field fires, they're trying to do their own job. We don't want to be in the way of them doing their job. The hard part becomes Most of the time, if we're not giving the full extent of every detail of whatever's happening, the viewer comes back to us and says, why aren't you telling us more? Why don't you know more? And we're trying to respect the authorities and wait for that information to come in from them. And it's, you know, it's just, it, there could be a lot of factors. It's an open investigation. We don't want to be the reason that police aren't able to make an arrest or move forward in an investigation because we put too much information out there. It's notifying family members when there's been a tragedy in someone's life. And so, you know, it's just this constant, we get the backlash of you're not doing enough. And I wish more people understood, you know, we are trying to be respectful of so many people in that situation. We're not going to go out there and report on rumors. That's really important to me. I was a news reporter myself, so I would never encourage my team to just go out there with information without it being confirmed. And okay, so maybe we're not first to the story because of that, but we're putting a story out that's responsible. And I would much rather be known for a responsible story than an irresponsible story that had false information potentially, or, you know, damning information that, like I said, could hurt an investigation or leading a family to getting that justice that they're looking for, just so that we can be first for providing it. That's not how I want to operate my newsroom.
Well, I think that's what gives WCIA such a history of credibility among their viewers, and also the respect for family members who have undergone, who have faced these tragedies. I know that there have been times that I had someone on earlier that worked at your station, and they said that that's one of the things that you are conscious and try to be very aware of. You know, you're not, WCA isn't going to go out and stick a microphone in somebody's face and say, so how do you feel after they've just lost a loved one? Because, you know, you pretty well know how they feel. And you're not going to be that, you know, not going for sensationalism. And I think that is what is a big factor in what makes WCIA the station that it is.
Yeah, you know, I'm a mother and I always put myself in that person's shoes. So, you know, when we hear about a tragedy in our community, it's not about how quickly we can get an interview for that story. It's about who could we possibly talk to about the tragedy, but also is it going to make for an informative story, or are we just trying to get someone to cry on camera or express emotion? And I just don't think that's effective journalism. I think when a reporter can pursue this story as an everyday person that could be in that exact same situation, we're able to develop a much better rapport and connection with whoever that person is, because I was that reporter that had to knock on the grieving mother's door. I was that reporter live on the scene that had to see family receive terrible news. And that stuff follows you home, and that stuff sticks with you, and you see those faces again, and you want to be so respectful in those moments, because, you know, that's what that family is going to hear in the evening news that night. And so you need to be thinking about the images that you're showing. You need to be thinking about the interview topics that you're discussing. And we always say, and we mean it very genuinely, when there's been a loss in the community, we want to do an interview with the people that knew this person to honor their life and let other people know how remarkable of a person this was. And we don't feel we can be the ones to tell that story without that personal connection. And I think there's always time and place. You know, sometimes we give something 2 or 3 days before we reach out to a family member. But we had a situation last week where you know, a grieving parent, and we reached out with a simple message on Facebook, and it was regarding permission to show a photo of of their child. And I think about my almost 6-year-old, and I would really hope that somebody reached out to me for my permission before I turned on the news and saw a picture of my child out there without my knowledge. So I think it hurts and helps me in a lot of ways. But I know every time that one of those tragedy stories comes across our newsroom, I think twice before I just say, let's go out and get the story. And I think we're very mindful in how we go and approach getting the story so that we can be respectful of people's feelings and emotions before they, you know, we've made it worse in a sense, because we never go to a scene wanting to make the situation worse. We don't want to be out there either. And I wish the public knew that more. We don't thrive off of chasing, you know, the next breaking news story. We're out there to inform our viewers of what it is they need to know about. But it's really tough on us too, to be able to have to see those things and hear those things and live with those things, and knowing it's our responsibility to tell those stories.
I don't think people realize the empathy that it takes to be on your end and walk that fine line between telling a story and respecting those families who are grieving, and instill many of them in a state of shock. I think that's a very fine line that you walk. So what do you like to do to unwind when you're away from the station, other than be with your son? What kind of hobbies do you have that bring you joy?
Yeah, well, I've been married for 9 years this week to my husband, Jordan. And he is always, thank you, he is always looking for something fun for us to do. So we're avid Illinois fans, even though he also went to Eastern. That's where I met him, down at Eastern, in ballroom dance class, of all places. We like to go to sporting events together. We like to cook new recipes together. We like to just spend time with friends and family, you know, whether we're hosting or going to see our friends and family, with my parents being still relatively close to the area and his family being close to the area in Macon County. You know, it just kind of works. We are family people. Absolutely. I would say most weekends, that's what we're doing. But now, you know, as Gibson gets older, we're going to flag football and we're trying basketball and all these different things. So I think we're just always, whatever we can do to spend genuine time together. My husband works a pretty crazy work schedule as well. And I think it's important that when we do have time together, we just have a little bit of downtime. You know, sometimes we'll just do date night in and keep it simple. And then other times we'll get dressed up and go out to eat and see friends and things like that. But I think it's finding a happy balance. And we always say our house is our safe space. You know, that's where we can be ourselves and we can spend genuine time with Gibson, and whatever it is he wants to do. We always ask him, you know, on Sundays, what do you want to do today? And it's so fun to hear what a almost 6-year-old envisions the day to be. But I think we do a really good job of being able to be there for Gibson, even though we work these hectic schedules. We have really good family members that help us a lot as well. But we like to travel. We don't go on any international travel yet. That's not big. We did for our honeymoon, and we've been to Mexico a few times just for, you know, a little bit longer trips. But I don't know. I'm just excited to grow old with him and see where life takes us. We always say we're putting in the work now so that we can relax later in life. And I really believe that if we work hard now, we'll get a chance to, who knows what we'll do when we get older. But, you know, just being there for Gibson and our families and making those memories. But as for hobbies, I think it's just anything that brings me joy, because like I said, there can be hectic days here. But I really enjoy my downtime and just being able to shut this off and get to spend that one-on-one time with Jordan and my son.
Well, I'm so glad that you did not end up going to Nashville or one of those larger markets, that you did come to Champaign and leave your stamp on WCIA and Central Illinois, because it's you've made an incredible difference, I think. So do you have any contact information would you care to give, or how people could?
Yeah, you could always find me here at the station. It's real simple, just mgrindstaff@wcia.com. You can call the station and ask for me as well. And then, like I said, I'm not super big on social media. I have social media, but it's not as engaging. And I'm on LinkedIn as well. So if there's somebody listening that is seeking career advice or going to be looking for that next opportunity in this industry, I'm always happy to have that conversation. I still spend a lot of time going down to Eastern and recruiting. I go over to U of I to job fairs and speak with students as well. And so, you know, I've been asked to speak at Rotary Club and giving my perspective at different luncheons and things like that. So I really enjoy getting out of the station and being, you know, we say kind of a brand ambassador for WCIA, because I feel my time here, I've got a pretty good knowledge of what we do here and what we're all about. So I think, you know, if you ever have interest in reaching out to me, I encourage you to do so, and always happy to have a phone conversation, or I try to get to my emails as quickly as possible. I think I get about 600 a day, so I try to juggle all of them. But you know, if I'm not responsive the first go around, which it sounds like, Wendy, I wasn't, try again, because chances are eventually I will see the message.
Busy. You're such a busy person. I did not take offense at it, because I never imagined there'd be 600, but I knew there would be a lot. Before I let you go, I have one last question. You mentioned disciplinary action. I know it's maybe a violation of personnel privacy, but could you tell me if it was Kevin Lighty or Jacob Dickey who you've had to put their nose in the corner more often for being bad?
Oh, they keep me on my toes, that's for sure. I mean, Kevin's his own bag of tricks, but when you talk about a team player, Kevin Lighty is the definition of a team player. He's so funny. If I have to say, Kevin, I need a favor, or Kevin, I need you to work an extra shift, he says, I'm your guy. Yeah. And he always does. Yeah. And that's what's really cool, is I've got that main player team, and they've got my back. They've got my back, yeah, as much as I've got their back. And so, you know, on days where Gibson might be home sick, or I've got offsite meetings and I can't physically be here in the station, I know that the station's in really good hands with the people that are here. So, you know, Kevin's definitely one of those. And then, you know, I thought with Jacob, I was getting a meteorologist, and I think he likes news as much as he likes weather. So, you know, sometimes I'm reining him in saying, are we doing weather today or are we doing news? But ultimately another team player. And, yeah, you know, it's people like that you need on your team to be able, mm-hmm, to successfully do your job. And I tell them all the time, I can't be successful if you're not successful. So, mm-hmm, I think we do a really good job of working together. And, you know, it might be a female thing, it might be a motherly thing, but I like to know them outside, mm-hmm, of just what I get with them at work, you know? So I like to hear Kevin's stories about his son and his wife. And I like to hear about Jacob's world travels. And I love, you know, being able to just have a girl conversation with Jennifer Roscoe, because I've known her a long time and I've known her in different capacities. You know, she was my mentor. She was, She was my person that I went to as I was learning to anchor and report and all these different things. And now being her boss was sometimes real like, am I really your boss? You know, because she's been here. She knows the ropes. But I think, you know, I think it's just an example of my connection with everybody here at this station is important. And I hope the impact that they've made on me, I've made just as much of an impact on them because I care about them all as much as I do my own family. You know, we always say we spend more time at work than we do with our own family. So I just hope that they all feel that. But Kevin or Jacob, I don't know. Every day can be a toss up of who I've got to reach out to and see what they're doing that day. But I think for the most part, you know, it's never an ill will and it's always for the betterment of the station, whatever they're doing.
No. And I know Adam and Seth, aren't near as active as those that Kevin and Jacob are, but, and, you know, and Amanda, all these people, you've had wonderful people and they've been wonderful to me to come on to the podcast and, all of them. So, and I appreciate you taking your time. I know that it's you said you had a hectic day. And so I want to thank you, Maggie Grindstaff, the first female news director of WCIA3 in Champaign, Illinois. I'm so proud that you've come on.
Well, thank you so much, Wendy. This was really enjoyable. And, you know, like you said, it's a hectic life, but taking the time to tell my story is something I enjoy too, because I hope that somebody hears my story, whether they're deciding what career they should go into or what challenge they should take next at work. And they're able to say, hey, you know what? If she can do it, I can do it. I always say I'm just faking it till I make it. And I do think I finally hit that point of making it. But, you know, I just encourage people, don't let people tell you it can't happen. Don't let people make it seem like you're not what they're looking for, because if you put the hard work in, you're absolutely going to see the benefit. And this role has not only been a benefit to my professional career, but like I said, learning to be a leader for a great team that I get to work side by side with every day is very rewarding in its own sense. So thank you for having me. And if anyone's listening and I can do something to help them out, feel free to reach out.
Well, thank you so much, Maggie. You've been such a pleasure and I've learned so much from you. And I know that our listeners will too. Thank you so much. Again, this is Life on the Illinois Prairie and that's going to end this episode. Everyone, please be kind. Thanks for listening to Life on the Illinois Prairie, the undercurrents of our American life. If you haven't yet, go ahead and subscribe to Life on the Illinois Prairie wherever you get your podcast. Stay tuned for more stories, interviews, and updates. I'm your host, Wendy Fleming Dexter. Until next time.
Produced by AutoVita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.